This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
Luke Geddes has written a novel set in Wichita. Since KMUW is based in Wichita, that's an oddity worth pointing out. The novel, Heart of Junk, is about a group of antique mall booth owners and the world of collectibles, a world Geddes discovered when he spent a couple of years in Wichita earning an MFA from Wichita State University. Heart of Junk is filled with humor, sadness, and cynicism. I wondered if Geddes' time in Wichita was filled with the same. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation.
Your book is called Heart of Junk. Do you have an elevator speech for the book when people say, what's your book about?
Yeah, my elevator speech is usually, I say, just Google it. Just look it up. but, you know, if pressed, I say it's about an antique mall in Wichita, Kansas, and all the people who have booths there. And there's a kidnapping, and there's a TV show as well. So I just sort of throw out the numerous elements. It's easy to sell the book around here because people hear it's set in Wichita and they want to read it right away.
So what gave you the idea for this book?
Well, when I moved to Wichita in 2008 to do my MFA at WSU, I was coming from Wisconsin, and growing up in Wisconsin as a teenager, I got into like punk culture, punk music, and I was really interested in thrift stores. I would go to the thrift stores, look for, you know, whatever cool things, punk things, I guess, that caught my eye. And then even after I sort of aged out of my punk phase, I was very into thrifting. So throughout undergraduate, throughout college, like every single weekend, me and my now wife, Steph, and our friend would hit every single thrift store throughout our college town area. But when me and Steph moved to Wichita, sorry to say, the thrift stores just didn't measure up to the great ones in Appleton and Oshkosh, Wisconsin. So one day we just sort of stumbled into a legacy antique mall, which is no longer in business in Old Town. And, you know, some kind of spark hit there. And that's when I really got into antiques and collecting vintage stuff. And that was really, you know, I really inextricably tie antique malls and that interest of mine to my time in Wichita, because that's when it sparked. And that's sort of how the novel began, is like you go to these different malls and you look at the different booths and you can get a sense of the personalities of the people who stock the booths just from like how organized or messy and the kinds of stuff they're selling.
So, you know, that kind of reminds me, one of your characters, Seymour, he had a bit to say about judgment, and this is a quote: "Why get to know someone through conversation or confession or sex when you could just as easily scrutinize the spines of their shelves, the tags on their clothes, the pictures on their walls?" There seems to be a lot of truth to that statement, but is there a danger of cynicism as well?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a danger of cynicism. I think that character is very cynical. I think I myself am quite cynical. But yeah, I think, you know, and I think probably, I mean, Seymour is obviously like not a happy or social person. And I think probably it's because of that sort of mindset. I think he's sort of realizing that, you know, you could find someone or, you know, be with someone who has like perfect ideal taste that matches with yours, but like that actually isn't indicative of anyone's personality. But I do think we often use it as shorthand, like our, you know, here's a list of my favorite things. If you match up with these, we have to be friends now.
Well, and I saw a lot of myself in that statement because I will judge everybody by their bookshelf.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't help it. So, and I might take that out. I don't know.
Yeah. Got to protect the innocent.
I was going to ask you about your time in Wichita. Did you guys hate it here?
I don't think so. I mean, it was definitely like there was a lot going on. You know, it was a transitional life period. Wichita was the first place I lived in that wasn't really home because I went to college very close to where I grew up. So everything that stands out about Wichita and its like quirks and weirdnesses, I think, took on more prominence. They were more noticeable because I realized like, oh, well, everywhere in the country isn't the same. There's all this weird stuff that's very Wichitan. And I couldn't have written a novel set in Wichita if I didn't have a lot of nostalgia for it, because spending years writing this book and being in this place in my head, it had to be somewhere where like I wanted to be. So there are definitely characters who have a lot of critical things to say about Wichita, some snotty things to say perhaps. And, you know, maybe some of those come from personal experience and observation, but, you know, I'm also not, you know, like an East Coast snob the way that some of the characters are. I've lived in the Midwest my whole life, and I don't really want to move away from it.
Now, Seymour also had a comment that stayed with me, and it seems to be an underlying theme of the novel. And it was about the amount of sadness in the world. All of these characters seem to have a little bit of loneliness and sadness in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I think there's a lot to the idea that, I mean, these characters are all, like, for the most part, they're all super invested in, like, a very niche sort of particular hobby or interest, whether it's, like, collecting postcards or vinyl records or whatever they collect and whatever they sell. And I think sort of lonely souls are drawn to those sorts of things, because I was just thinking a lot about, like, you know, if you care about one particular thing a whole lot, but it's not something that most people care about, like postcards or collecting stamps, collecting like art glass, there's a loneliness there where even if you find someone with the shared interest and you don't connect, it's like, you know, what is all this for?
It was a little bit gut-wrenching when the postcards ended up in the dumpster. Did that hurt to write?
No, I was kind of, that part didn't hurt to write, but there is like a reference in the book, or there's a part in the book where Seymour is thinking about how, you know, a lot of collectors he knows reach a certain age or a period where they go through like the purge. They decide like all these years I put into collecting this stuff, and they just sort of get rid of it all at once. And even there's a reference to a guy who he gets evicted, like he's going through a rough patch, and he doesn't have anywhere to store his record collection, so he throws it all in the dumpster because he doesn't want to give it to anyone else because he can't stand the thought of someone else having his collection. And that's something I sort of took from this documentary called Vinyl, which is about record collectors. But it's not really about music. It's really just about the neurosis of, like, accumulating all of these things.
Are you a collector?
Yeah, I collect a lot of different things. I sort of go through cycles. So unlike a lot of the characters in the book, I don't have, like, my one thing that I'm trying to, like, complete the collection. So throughout, you know, it really started in my time in Wichita, visiting places like Paramount and Hewitt's and all the other antique malls. And I've gone through sort of different phases of collecting things like Marx figures. So these sort of very simple sort of action figures that were manufactured by the Marx Company in like the 50s, 60s, 70s. Pinback buttons, Halloween decorations, vinyl records, pulp paperbacks, or just like whatever catches my eye. So that's what I like about going to these places, is that even if you knew what to look for, you wouldn't be able to find it. It's like these things that you never would have thought to even guess that they existed, you find, and for whatever reason, you're like, oh, I gotta own that. I gotta put it on my shelf.
You know, the attention to detail in this novel was remarkable. Not only the research that must have gone into these collectibles, but also the tone that you were using to talk about them through, you know, the character's voice. Did it require a lot of research, or is that something that you already had?
A lot of it, it didn't require a ton of research. For some of the more niche interests that aren't really my own, like pottery or like art glass, which I consider like growing up boring kind of collectibles, I had to do a bit of research. But for the rest of it, a lot of it was just from my own experience and what I've noticed and what I've collected myself. I actually had a friend who read the book, and she said, like, where did you get all this, like, arcane music knowledge? Because a lot of the characters, or a few of the characters, are, like, big record collectors talking about, like, rare pressings and, you know, obscure bands and stuff like that. Like, she was asking, like, what kind of research did you do for that? And I said, it didn't require research. It just required a friendless adolescence with lots of free time.
So I mentioned that this novel is told through a chorus of characters. Was any one more enjoyable to write than the others?
I think the reason there are so many characters is that, you know, it was the first novel I was, like, writing or trying to write. So I just thought, like, I'll have a ton of characters and a ton of points of view, because if I get stuck or if I get bored, I can just switch to a new one. But I would say, like, probably the characters that were the easiest and most natural to write for whatever reason. One is Seymour, which is the character whose interests most overlap with mine and perhaps whose cynicism is most like my own. And then the other one, for whatever reason, is Ronald, who is the elderly postcard collector who loves to have, like, deep conversations, but no one ever wants to talk to him because he's really boring and his hobby is really boring. So maybe I relate too much to that one as well.
Was any more difficult to write than the others?
I think there were characters that were harder to sort of deal with in the editing stage. So after I had a whole draft of the novel, there were some characters where their chapters really just sort of sprawled out in directions that ultimately proved to be a distraction. So, like, the Keith character, who is one of the co-owners of the antique mall, he's really just sort of like your sad midlife crisis having dad. He was a little bit harder to get a handle on. I mean, I think, yeah, Keith was sort of the main character that I really enjoyed writing, but I had to do a lot more editing on.
You mentioned that some characters or some people would do a purge and get rid of things. And it looked like there was a reference to, like, Marie Kondo in here. Have you noticed, I'm assuming you still go to, you know, thrift stores and antiques?
Yeah.
Have you noticed an upsurge in stuff at these places because people are trying to purge?
I don't think the Marie Kondo stuff is really hitting, like, the collectors, because it's so antithetical to the collector mindset. But one thing I was thinking about is sort of, especially with these really niche interests where there's a lot of, like, older people who are into them, but, like, they're not really getting new collectors. So one reason I had the character Ronald be a postcard collector is because when I was here in Wichita, I went to a postcard collector convention with my friend Ian. Like, that was something we got really excited about for whatever reason, because that's what happens when you live in Wichita. And we went to this convention, and there were lots of cool, like, postcards and things to look at and buy. But we noticed that we were demographically, like, 30 years younger than anyone else there. And we got the sense that these collectors were sort of trying to vampirize us into becoming postcard collectors like them, because, you know, sort of once they pass away, there's not really, like, a generation of younger postcard collectors. So that sort of relates to what I think you're asking, you know, this sense of, you know, there are some things that are, like, perennial favorites in the collecting world, but there are also things that, you know, might have been of huge value, both personal and financial at one point, but when there's no longer anyone who wants that stuff, is it just going to get dumped out in a thrift store or in the trash or at an antique mall and just collect dust? So I really think that there's always these cycles, both at an individual level of, like, acquire, 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 purge, 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 but also at a larger cultural level.
So Heart of Junk is currently in development by Fox 21 Television Studios. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, that stuff, I mean, I try to stay out of that stuff just because it's overwhelming, and I have, you know, an agent and, like, a media representative who sort of, like, you know, talks to who I imagine as these, like, Hollywood bigwigs about it. And it's very exciting. That stuff always happens, like, so very slowly. What I keep telling people is, like, my book is a Disney property now. I'm practically a Disney princess because Disney owns everything, including this Fox 21 TV production company. But it would be awesome if something happens, but a lot of books get optioned and nothing develops from it. But it sounds great, right? So if someone's not impressed that you wrote and published a novel, you can say, well, it's also in development as a TV show, and they'll probably be impressed by that. So it's a great little nugget to have in your back pocket there.
Well, and they should also be impressed that you are also a visual artist, and you've started a record label.
That's right. Yes, I'm so glad you asked. I, You know, the characters in the novel, especially the music lovers and the record collectors, they really sort of, I think, feel a responsibility to preserve and to promote sort of these little known albums that maybe came out in editions of 300 or 100 and sort of to be the keepers of this arcane knowledge, but also to spread it and distribute it. When I got some money from my book advance, I also was getting invested in this very little known musician, Benjamin Dean Wilson. And he put out his first album, and it was like one of those magic moments that's rarer and rarer the older you get. Like when you're a teenager, you're discovering like all your favorite bands for the first time. But then when you enter your 20s and 30s, there's not as much that sounds totally new to you, right? So when I listened to this album by Benjamin Dean Wilson, Small Talk, last year, it was like, oh, it was like hearing Velvet Underground for the first time. It was like hearing the Kinks, Village Green Preservation Society for the first time, like immediate, like I knew this was something special and a new favorite. And then he produced another album, but his record label didn't want to put it out on vinyl. So as like a collector, as a completist, like it was driving me crazy that I couldn't put this excellent second album next to the first album on vinyl. So I just decided to be financially irresponsible and spend a bunch of money to put this album called The Smartest Person in the Room out on vinyl. And so I'm trying to use the opportunity I have as a literary celebrity, small-time literary celebrity, to promote this this musical work as well.
Now, we've talked about a lot with hopefully not giving anything away in the book. Is there anything that you want to talk about that I haven't asked?
The novel, it really has two settings, right? One setting is the mall itself, and then the other setting is like the College Hill neighborhood of Wichita, where I lived with my wife for a couple of the years. I was living in Wichita, and for people who have lived in Wichita or still live in Wichita, there's a lot of like little landmarks and little references to the area that are pretty arcane. I think only like true Wichita heads are going to recognize them. There's in College Hill Park, there's like graffiti sort of scrawled into the cement of like this little parapet on one of the walks, and it says Husker Du, the band Husker Du and The Clash. And that was something I would always notice when I walked by and wondering like, who was this cool person who did this Husker Du, The Clash graffiti? So I knew when I wrote the novel and I had a scene in College Hill Park, I better make a reference to that.
And you didn't use the Jesus Loves You that was scrawled into the cement on the other side?
Yeah, I must have forgotten about that one, yeah. But maybe for the sequel, I guess.
That was Luke Geddes, author of the book Heart of Junk, which was published by Simon & Schuster. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a rating or review. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editor is Lou Ann Stevens, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.